The Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world.
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh, now, here's Jim Coyle.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome into another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Glad to have you as always, of course, as we have hit the end of the week and head steaming into week two of the college football season. Glad to have you. Looking forward to another great Friday. Todd Leary will be along to join us. Zach Osterman from the Indy Star, the Indiana IU insider for the Star, and Alec Lasley from thehoosier.com on three will also join us as well. As in addition to football, we get you caught up on what's going on with basketball, visits, and such conversations that may be happening all around, and this, that, and the other thing. Little tidbits like Bill Belichick and North Carolina have banned the New England Patriots staff from accessing the Tar Heels program. Oh, as the world turns, baby, it keeps on turning. This is yet another page in the ever-growing saga of Bill Belichick post-New England Patriots after going to 1,000 Super Bowls. But don't know what the reason is. Michael Lombardi is the North Carolina football general manager. But when asked for comment, he simply said, good luck, and hung up the phone. Lombardi and Tar Heels pro liaison Francie Jourdain informed the Patriots that they would be banned from the UNC campus the day before one of their scouts was scheduled to visit last month, a source told ESPN. Belichick spent 24 years as the coach of the Patriots, run that ended just 2 years ago. Two NFL scouts who worked for other teams told ESPN in North Carolina, under Belichick's leadership, offers limited access to all NFL personnel. Clubs are allowed to speak only with Jourdain, and UNC's college relations website says that scouts will have zero access to coaches or other personnel people. Yeah, so Bill Belichick continues, even in his college days, of course. That's great for those athletes that are looking for that next level access. The term zero access appears three times on UNC's college relations website, a page accessible only to NFL personnel. One scout said NFL personnel are only able to watch three periods of practice at UNC. Each college program varies in access to its NFL personnel, but scouts said that many programs allow scouts to watch full practices, and I would imagine that is the case because generally that's not something that they're worried about getting out, being reported, and that it's generally in the benefit to the benefit of their student athletes. But there you go. Page 58 in the Bill Belichick. How's it going in Chapel Bill, everybody? How's everybody doing? Glad to have you on this Friday. What a crisp and cool Friday. Hello, Signorace. My old Spanish teacher, Mr. Hoffman. Signorace, Jaime says hola. I've been watching Breaking Bad again, so the Spanish is coming back a little bit. I think you'll be proud, Teach. How's everybody doing, man? What a great Friday. A little crisp fall-like feeling out there. I know it's September, but this is early September. We don't got to get this temperatures until a little bit later on. Senior Ace says, got to find an effective way to be able to score whenever they penetrate the red zone. Expect to see a big change tomorrow. Have to agree with that. There's no way Kurt Cignetti was happy at all with one of their biggest attributes from a season ago as they led the nation in red zone efficiency, going 4 of 7 against Old Dominion, not going to diminish the Dominion. But, yeah, you've got to, especially the way they dominated on the ground, they rushed for over 300 yards, but couldn't punch it in. You had a drop touchdown, which that's going to happen. If you watch the Dallas game last night, Dallas and Philadelphia, fun game, especially that first half. They lit it up, but the second half was not kind to CeeDee Lamb. Holy smokes. He dropped 2.5 passes. He dropped 2 that were right in the breadbasket. One was a huge drop that would have put him in scoring position in a game that they only trailed by 4. Third one was would have been a great catch, but great players make great catches, make great plays. So Justin says it Hurts was his fantasy quarterback. Well, you didn't have too bad of a night. He was probably racking up the points. He had 2 first half touchdowns. And sitting next to a friend, Jeff Schroeder, the pro at the Golf Pro at Eagle Point, and he was complaining that he didn't take the over for the game, and we were in the first half, and I'm like, it was like 49, I think, and I'm like, yeah, that's still kind of high. He goes, no, look at this, and I'm like, the difference in NFL football is there are always a lot of adjustments that happen at the half. And I said, I wouldn't expect the second half to be like this. And boy, I don't think either team scored. I think the halftime score was 24-20. I'd have to go back and look. But if there was, it was just a field goal, I believe. But yeah, Zippos in the second half. Fun game to watch to get the NFL season started. That's a tough loss for Dallas, as you have an opportunity to knock off the reigning world champion, Philadelphia Eagles, and on the road, no less. On the road, no less, and can't get that done. Yes, it would. Yes, it would. But I enjoyed it, getting to watch that game. So now we've got college football swing. Well, I don't want to skip over the high schoolers tonight. Hey, go out and watch a high school football game somewhere. There's plenty. Wherever you live, it's in a small town. What better than that? Going out to Friday Night Lights, baby. Put on the take the jacket tonight. Going to be good. Oh, mercy. It is going to be nice. Yeah, Caleb says, anyone that had the over has to be unbelievably upset, because there were 41 points in the first half. Yeah, that's nuts. I would not have expected it to be that low, but I was. That's pro football, man. Like, that's what when I told Jeff that, and my friend, I said, and it is. I don't think there's another sport where things change so dramatically at the half, because, man, these guys, they've got so much technology. They're so smart. They're looking at every single thing. And they go in and they make legit adjustments at halftime, because whatever was working in the first half was working for both teams. However, both quarterbacks were running wild. It was kind of a fun game to watch. That first half was really fun to watch. Glad to have you along. Are you ready for the weekend, baby? Are you ready for some football? Make sure you go to our Pick'ems, College Pick'ems. the ESPN Fantasy tab. Just go down to College Pick'em. And you've only missed 1 week, so jump in. The group is ISB Radio, and the password is simply Signetti 2025, one word. One word. What are the selections this week? Iowa State. Big game. We'll talk about all that and more. Todd Leary's going to join us next. We'll go ahead and hit our first break. Glad to have you along. We're back after this short, short intermission. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Friday. Glad to have you along. And that means a visit from Todd Leary, the shot father from myjumpshot.com. Make sure if you've got a kid, know a kid, maybe you are a kid, need some fundamentals tweaked. Well, no better than to do it than the shot doctor himself. Just reach out to him at myjumpshot.com. How's it going?
It's going. Going good. Going good. I guess we're enjoying this fall weather. I guess it is.
I'm telling you, boy, it was crisp out there this morning.
It is chilly. Chilly.
Yep. Always a good thing. But it really locks in the sense of football season a little sooner than we'd like it. But I think maybe we'll get an extended fall. Who knows?
And, that would be great. I'll accept it if we're getting an extended fall. But I did see we're going to be up in the mid to high 80s again next week. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I thought it was going to creep back up a little bit because it's a little early. We get all of September. September is usually one of those kind of a bouncy month. You're going to get some really good days, and then you're going to get some nice days. Usually not too many bad ones, but we'll take pretty much whatever we get. But,
yep.
Man, I don't know if you got to watch that NFL game last night to kick off the season, but what a great first half and big change in the second half. But fun to get that underway. And then, of course, college, we're in week two of the football season. High school, they're in week three already, man. So we're rolling along. Everybody was counting down the season. Hell, the start's already flown by.
That was a lot of fun for the first half. Was thankfully for me, that's all I watched. And so, you know, I thought last weekend's college football, you know, maybe the LSU Clemson game saved it a little bit, but I didn't think it was very good football. And you could start with the Indiana performance. It was fine. I mean, they won and did what they were supposed to do and go win, but you know, I don't think anyone would say they wowed you. And then that Ohio State Texas game was about as boring as you can get in a college football game. And so it wasn't great football until the first half of last night's game. And then you're watching the NFL, you're like, okay, yep, that's exciting, I'm ready for that to be here. Thankfully I didn't watch the second half because there wasn't a whole lot that happened, but yeah, it's, we're in full swing, and you know, Indiana has a really good opportunity. I think the schedule being what it is good for the Hoosiers. You know, to get things kind of cleaned up a little bit. I don't think they played very well last weekend. I think they would probably tell you they didn't play very well. We know Coach Signetti would. And so, yeah, I think this is a good opportunity for them to come out and clean a lot of things up that happened in week one.
Yeah, he was certainly not happy with how things went other than the win. There was just things that needed to be cleaned up. You just used the exact right words. And some of that was a few drop passes. The red zone was a little weird because they kind of pushed Old Dominion around for the most part all day, rushing for over 300 yards, but got down on the goal line and it got a little tight for them, which was, and I mentioned this earlier, Indiana led the nation last year in red zone efficiency, and starting out 4 of 7 against one of your non-con teams, not exactly lighting it on fire.
Yeah, well, and that's what stuck out last year when they played Ohio State. Like, Indiana was able to move the football, you know, especially at the beginning of the game. But that, you know, the red zone, the stat they talked about last year, when they got to the Ohio State game, it changed. It wasn't the same. They weren't pushing people around. And I think that maybe it's a little better that early in the season they got tested a little bit with it. And it's something that they can work on a little more and clean up. Because, yeah, they were very successful at it last year. And you know, maybe it was a little fool's gold. Maybe they were successful against teams that weren't as good as the top tier teams. And, you know, this just gives them that opportunity to know it's something to continue to work on all year long, which we know they're going to. I mean, Cignetti is not a guy that lets any little detail go by. So we know they're going to be working on it amongst several other things. Those drop passes, like that score of last week's game was a little not indicative of how Indiana kind of dominated, because there was at least two drop passes that were touchdowns, and I mean wide open touchdowns. So score could have been a lot different, but it wasn't just the score. I mean, I think Coach Cignetti hit on pretty clearly throughout the week that there was a lot of things they wanted to work on.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Old Dominion should not have scored in the game at all. They
right.
did not
single snap, Todd, on their own side of the field. Never crossed the 50, except for the two times James was just streaking by everybody else.
Right.
With that 75 and 78 yard runs. But yeah, and those are things that you've got a new defensive line. That's where they have the most newness, I guess you would say, defensively. Other than that, they've got all of their big guns back. So just getting adjusted, I think, and I talked to Brian Haynes last night, as a matter of fact. He was at the radio show, and he was on there after Coach Sig, and just getting everybody going through. It's a new system for those guys, and probably a lot to take in, as whether you're a basketball or football player, new terminology, new everything from wherever you've been before. And I would expect for football, it's more so than – everything else, because yep. there's so many offenses you have to be able to check in out of quickly on the fly. And I heard Bryant talking about that, you know, they have contact with these players through the helmets, and that's the same for defense with a couple of guys, but that only goes for 15 seconds and there's a certain time and then it clicks off. He said, boy, what happens a lot of times is they'll check out of something after that 15 seconds. I can't say anything. I can see it, but I can't say anything. So just some kind of unique inside thinking of what goes on there. But, yeah, that's something they'll get better at. They got better last year. I mean, you just look at
right.
toward the end of the year. Everybody gets better. So it doesn't matter what sport you're playing.
You've
got to get, you know, practice makes it permanent.
And those players will get better and every game and every rep and every opportunity they have to make those adjustments and see those adjustments that the offense is doing and knowing what the tendency is when they do that, like that, they'll all get better at that as the season goes on. And that's what having a bunch of new guys makes it more difficult to get comfortable with that, but they will, and they'll do it more, and the more reps, the better. But, you know, the one thing I was going to say is, you know, a lot of us played football, you know, back in the high, and we were, our last football games were back in the high school days. And I think back to those, and I can remember how frustrating it was. The same thing happened in basketball, but not nearly to the extent it did in football. But this was the Hoosiers' first opportunity to go hit other people and go play and play against other people and have other people run in plays. You remember, I can remember this so vividly back in high school, of how mad you would get at the defense, because when a play is called, they would know what the play is and they know what you're running. And they, you know, they would kind of, they're not supposed to fudge towards the hole that they know you're going to, but they do. And it's, they want to make plays too. They want to impress the defensive coaches. And so I just remember how mad we used to get when, you know, it would be, we called it play in the play. Like they knew what the play was and they would just kind of fudge that direction. Basketball is the same way. Obviously, they know what you're running. When you're practicing against your own team every day, you know what you guys are running and all that. Football is just a little different. When they're running those plays, they see the formations. The defense knows what that is. And that's why these games are good opportunities, because it's your first chance that you're sitting across from somebody. They don't know exactly what you're running. And in practice every day, you know, they see the formations and they see what they are. They know, maybe not know exactly. I mean, you could trick them from time to time, but the defense knows what you're running when it's your own team. And these games are a good opportunity. I remember I got in multiple fights being so mad when guys would play the play. That's what we always called it. And this, I'm talking at IU. Like, they would get so mad at me because I would do it too. They would do it too. And it would just be a, you know, I know what you're running, so I'm going to cut that screen off and I'm going to cut that cut off. And it just, it gets frustrating, but these games are what these guys' opportunity to go out and play against people that don't know exactly what you're running. And that's, you know, that's what these early games are for. And that's what it, that's why it's so much more fun to play, you know, the games than it is in practice, because everybody in practice knows what you're running.
Yeah. And sometimes that does help, because, you know, hey, what if they read you right, or what if they make the right move? But the goal is to practice what you're trying to do. And then when they do that on more than one occasion, it gets aggravating. I'd want to punch somebody in the mouth. Yeah. I'm like, dude, you got to let us run this stuff. You're working through. So, yeah.
Jamal Meeks. Excuse me. The only difference is I'm not punching Jamal Meeks in the face, because Jamal Meeks could break me in half.
It reminds me of when I watched the Christian Laettner 30 for 30 long time ago. And I learned that, well, everyone thought of him as being just an absolute, you know,
butthole.
Jackass.
Yeah.
He was a competitor. He was deep down a freaking competitor. And I was listening to Bobby Hurley tell the story about how they would go at it in practice. But he said in games, Laettner would just piss him off. He would purposely, when taking the ball out, would leave the ball short, you know. He'd have to go back. He's like,
right.
He said one day in practice, he did something and he threw the ball right at his head. He said, man, I took off running because he chased me plumb out of the gym and I didn't stop running. I just thought that was hilarious, but it shows the competitive nature that goes on in practice. And I don't think there's probably more competition in a basketball practice more so than football now because of the trying to limit the contact. But man, the practice in basketball can probably and is probably more ornery than the games can get because of those reasons.
No doubt. And you've got guys, you know, you got guys that's number 6, 7, 8, 9 on the depth chart in basketball. Like, they're trying to get into the starting lineup. They're trying to get more minutes, if not the starting lineup. Like, you're competing. Like, you're competing every day to try to get to play more. And so, yeah, you want to do anything that you can to get out there. And, like, I'll never forget, I've told this story to you on the show before. Our very first practice when we came in, you remember we came in with the 7 recruits. We had this big famous recruiting class coming in, and there were 7 of us. And I remember Jamal Meeks, the very first day in the locker room before we went out on the court, he said, hey, guys, we got a bunch of new guys in here. This is something that I want you to remember for your whole career, is what happens out on that court does not carry into the locker room. And out there, I'm going to try to kill you. But when we come back in here, I'll hug you, ice your ankle if I need to. Like, he's like, we're brothers in here, but out there I'm gonna try to kill you. And I thought, okay, I mean, I kind of get what he's saying. He's being a leader. I get what he's saying. No, we got out there, I had scratches, you're bleeding every day in practice. Like, everybody is battling everybody, and especially the early season. Like, later on, Big Ten season, practices calm down just a little bit, but those early season practices, no, I mean, it's elbow people in the mouth, there's fights all the time. Throwing the ball at people's heads. Oh my gosh. Like, I was notorious for, I'm pretty accurate. I got to be pretty good at chucking that ball. I remember Coach Kiefer in high school got mad at me one time because I did that. and I thought it was kind of a cool thing, and coaches don't like it as much as I thought it was cool. But yeah, I give Jamal that credit all the time, because there needs to be that guy on every team that just puts it out there and says, hey, look, when we're out on the field, we're warriors and we're battling. But when we come in here, it's all left out on the field. We're not carrying that into the locker room. And I really thought that was important. And as my career went on, that became more important to me. And it was something we tried to pass down to the younger guys. And it was just a cool thing. And I'm sure, you know, in this, you saw the fights last night in the Dallas and Philadelphia game. Like, that's their first opportunity to go swing at somebody else. And you know, they took full advantage of it, and they hate each other anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Those are two bitter rivals. But I'm glad you brought that up, because Jalen Carter tossed early for spitting.
Oh my gosh.
I can understand so much. I can get the fighting, this and that, all the time. spitting is just something I'm like, why does that even come into your head to do that? Because that is just such a, the word I want to use is not, I'm not going to use it, but such a B thing to do. You deserve to be punched right in the face if you do that to anybody.
And look, you're all understand the pros do it. No, yeah, they're amped up. They're ready to go. Like you understand, I know there's adrenaline flowing and all that. If he'd have punched him in the face, if he'd have punched Dak Prescott right in the helmet in the face, you could have understood that. Not spitting. Like it's a written rule, but it's also an unwritten rule. And it's just something that you don't do. And there have been numerous guys in the last few years. It seems to happen once, twice, three times every year. Somebody gets tossed or spitting on somebody, and you're just like, how's that even a thing? Like, how does that?
And it doesn't matter what sport it is either. It crosses all bounds. Basketball, yeah. Football, it soccer.
It really does. You're right.
Brian, that's a funny comment. Said they had an active shooter. The spitter was the active spitter. Shooter.
Which, the active spitter.
All you can do is laugh
spitter.
At it now.
Active spitter situation.
Exactly. That'll cost him. That's going to cost him more than getting tossed out of that game. He's going to get fined, as he should get fined. It's just disgusting. And because pros are so pro. And that's another thing that I just through the years, you just listen to guys, how they talk. And most of the time they talk about being a professional, playing professional, that it's a job. That you have to be professional in this. And I get inside the lines, the competitive juices, that changes everything. It's not like going to an everyday job where usually kind of calm. I mean, you may have a job that has some stress to it, but you're not amped up like this where, the guy across from you is trying to take your head off. So it's a different situation. But I always hear how, they understand. They are professionals and – especially with being on TV and all of that in this age, they've gained the knowledge. They've grown up in a different age of being seen by everything. So, yeah, it's just
right.
Yeah, it's gross, and it's
and that wasn't in like the bottom of a huddle. That wasn't in the bottom of a pile or anything. That was straight up face to face, standing up in front of a referee.
I missed the play. I missed it, and all I kept seeing on the ticker was. After the kickoff. And I'm like, what do you mean after the kickoff? Dak Prescott's not on the damn kickoff team. So
no, it was before the first play. They had not run a single play yet. It was before the very first play of the game. They ran the kickoff, came out, they spotted the ball. And then, the defense came out for Philadelphia and the offense came out for Dallas. And somehow those guys ended up kind of face to face right there when they were spotting the ball. There was an injury. So they had time to wait for just a second. And so on the injury on the kickoff, like they had to cart the guy off the field. So it took a minute, and that's why it happened right then. They had not even run a play. Like Jalen Carter did not play a single play last night. He ran out on the field once and got tossed. And that's just like, the Players Association and like they go to when players get fined and ejected for certain things, like they go stick up for him. They, they fight it and they try to get the fine diminished or thrown out or all of that. They won't in this case. I don't think they will. In this one, I think the Players Association will be like, whatever the fine is, you better pay it, because that just doesn't happen. Like, we can't allow that to become a thing. No matter how big the fine is, it's not enough. Like, he should get suspended for like 6 games and lose his salary. Like, then you'll get guys to not do that.
Yeah, one would think that needs to be dealt with. There's health concerns nowadays. I mean,
I forget all that. It's just disgusting. Like, it's just gross.
Can you imagine that happening during the COVID era?
I mean, look at what Rudy Gobert endured from just trying to make the joke. Remember when he had the microphones and he was just he wasn't maliciously, like, we didn't know it was that big a deal at that time, but yeah. There is some kind of health concern with it and all that. And I don't want to get back to everybody with masks and all that stuff. But, I mean, it's just gross. Like, you just don't do that. It is a written rule, but it's also a written rule. And it just doesn't happen. It should not happen. And, hopefully, I want to say he'll learn from it. But, I mean, he's an adult. I know he's young as a player, but He's an adult. Like, he should know that already. But hopefully it just doesn't happen again. We don't have to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, hopefully so. Hey, during your playing days, George Raveling was in and around the game. And did you have any interactions? Didn't he? See, I know he coached at USC. Did he coach at Minnesota at one time?
I think he coached at Iowa, didn't he? Wasn't he at Iowa?
Iowa, is that where it was?
Yeah, but, I'm pretty sure he was at Iowa. But he was a good friend with Coach Knight, and actually he had a son that was the same age as us. And so Pat Knight, or roughly the same age, and so he was a friend of Pat Knight. So when we would go for the summertime, I remember me and Matt Painter and Pat Knight, and I can't remember Raveling's son's name. I cannot think of what his name was, but we would all pal around and hang around Bloomington quite a bit. He would be at Pat's house, you know, quite a bit. And then Coach Raveling, I don't think was coaching at the time when I was in school. And so he spent a lot of time in Bloomington. Coach Knight hosted a lot of coaches from across the world, actually, but across the country, and guys there for like a month every year. I've never been able to stand Digger Phelps since then. He's the worst. But I mean, George Raveling was definitely a guy who was around a lot, and he was a really good friend of Coach. I think he was an assistant coach on the Olympic team with Coach, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm not 100%. On that, but I think he was.
Played at West Virginia. I did not know that. And back when he played, three of their players were denied lodging at a local hotel. And I think, who was it? One of the well-known players, I just missed it. Elgin Baylor refused to play in a game in Charleston because of that once. But anyway, you want to talk about coming from humble beginnings. His family lived above a grocery store in an apartment whose bathroom was shared by four families, and his dad died when he was 9.
Wow.
His mother was committed to a mental institution a few years later. At 14, his grandmother sent him to a Pennsylvania boarding school. There he earned a basketball scholarship to Elgin. I don't know why. You want to talk about bringing yourself up out of the gutter?
Yeah.
And doing what he did, and was such a well-respected guy as well. And a lot of accolades. So thoughts with him. You lose someone like that. That's a piece of history, man. And,
I guess I didn't catch the beginning of that. Did he pass away? Did I miss?
Yeah. Hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mention it. Yeah. I buried the lead there. He passed away at the age of 88. So he lived. It's not like he died early. I guess any
we'll
day is.
Celebrate
I guess,
what a,
you
we'll
can
celebrate
always.
What a,
you can always consider it early. I would always consider my death date early, no matter when it comes.
Right. Yeah. You don't think you're gonna be ready for it, no matter what that is. But yeah, I mean, that we celebrate the life when you get to people that are that age. You celebrate what a great life they had, not that it's a tragic thing that they're gone. It's always surprises me when they say we're dealing with the tragedy of a loss of someone that's 88 years old. You're like, I mean, it's kind of expected, I guess, but. He was a good dude. He was a good dude. He was a good basketball dude. I liked him a lot. Like, he was one of the guys that, in the summer, I remember my first summer that was there. He was there in the summer, with his son, obviously. And I remember at a practice, like, he was pulled me aside and he would say some different things. I remember him talking to Pat Graham as well. Like, it was, he was a good guy. I liked him a lot. I had a lot of respect for him, and Coach Knight definitely had a lot of respect for him.
Well, he was the Basketball Weekly Coach of the Year in 92, so that's right in your wheelhouse of your collegiate career when he was at USC.
Was he at USC then? Yeah.
And was at Iowa before that. Then became an executive at Nike, where I'm sure he led a great life there, but he encouraged Michael Jordan to sign with Nike as he assisted then Olympic basketball coach Bobby Knight in 1984. So that probably set him up for a job for life, the best job he ever had.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I remember in that Michael Jordan movie or documentary, whatever that thing was about him signing with Nike and all that. I remember the George Raveling spin on that. I remember that aspect of that. I had forgotten about that, but yeah, he was definitely a part of that.
He introduced Jordan to Nike exec Sonny Vaccaro. Jordan wore Converse up till then, but who didn't?
Yep.
Everybody had worn Converse up to then, but without George Raveling, there is no Air Jordan. Think about that. That's a billion, multi-billion dollar industry on its own today.
Yeah. But yeah, there's several people you could say that about, though. But yeah, without Jordan's mom, without Sonny Vaccaro, without all those different people, none of that happens. But the funniest part of all of that is the guy who designed the shoe. I love that documentary that they did on that, because the guy who designed the shoe really was the star of the whole thing. And he, heck, nobody even knows what his name is. Like, it was just pretty funny.
Always is. The great shot father, Todd Leary, with us from myjumpshot.com. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. And when we do, they got some men's early bracketology out, which is nothing more than fodder to talk about, to be honest with you, because it's like this football season when you have all these teams that are Alabama, which
Boy, Florida State not ranked and moves up 26 spots in the ranking. Yeah, that tells you the ranking was wrong.
That tells you nobody knows what the hell they're talking about today. I mean, it used to be, you know, you were probably decently close. Now it is a freaking roll of the dice because nobody knows what these teams are going to be like. But we'll take a quick break. Shot Father's with us. We're back with more from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Stick with us. Just a quick break away. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Friday. Thanks for joining us. No matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville, up in the region on the voice of the region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. You've got it in the right place. Leave it locked there all day long, no matter where you're going, to keep up with what's going on and to listen to bubbleheads like us. makes your day go a lot better. Indiana basketball, it's out of sight, but it's not out of mind. And visits are going on. And you know about this, Todd, those fall visits when your basketball is not in full swing for you yet and you can go out and go to the football game weekends to a school and get shown around without
eat steaks, losing some eat steaks and lobster every night. Yeah, those I remember those days. They're nice.
So on the visits, you didn't have to go to Steak and Shake.
We did not. Nope. On the visits, we got to go to Zagreb or
Yonkos.
Actually, we used to go to McCree's a lot. Like I used to take it for lunch. I used to go to McCree's. You remember McCree's Deli out by the mall?
I know. I can't believe that thing's not around anymore.
I can't either. Home of the greatest cheesy garlic bread in the history of the planet. I put some pounds on. You want to figure out how to get a young kid fattened up? Take him to McCree's Deli for cheesy garlic bread every day.
Well, 2026 top 40 guard Junior County, and that is his name, Junior County, of Wasatch Academy in Utah, is the next member of this class to take an official visit to the Hoosiers starting today, which continues a busy schedule for the IU basketball staff. County cut his list to Indiana, Arizona, Purdue, Maryland, and UConn following the end of the summer circuit play. The rest of the visit schedule, he goes to Arizona next week, Maryland the week after that, and UConn after that. Man, Indiana is on so many short lists of big-time players. We've saw that some in the past, but you could tell there was no traction with most of those players. They were just on the list. That's different now. These guys are actively being recruited. And so I don't know how many they're going to get or which of that, but they're going to land some of these guys, which was not really happening before. It was just like a courtesy. But now they're in deep cotton with a lot of these guys. But this staff is actively recruiting, and they all have a great niche of an area where they do extraordinarily well in, whether it's the East Coast or Rod Clark, who has his area, and you've got Kenny Johnson, who the D.C. area, East Coast side, and Drew Adams, who the grassroots circuit, and all of Indiana, of course, but even further than that, internationally, I think he's got some great connections. But the visit coming in, I think he's the only one this weekend. So would you rather be on a visit by yourself where you're getting all the attention or with another guy or two?
You know, I did it both ways, and I can't really say it was, you know, when I went away to Minnesota, I went and visited Minnesota. I actually visited with Matt Painter. That one, I really appreciated someone else being there. I was so far away from home. I didn't know anybody. Obviously, you know, they wine and dine you and they take you around and do all the stuff. But that one was one that was fun to, to go on with somebody else. I think some of the other ones, nowadays kids go with their families and a lot, not all of them, but a lot of times when they have that opportunity, their families come. And so that I'd rather do by myself. If it was me and my mom and, I would prefer it probably by myself at that point. But, you know, it's just hard to, they're different nowadays. And now I know you talk about landing, you know, how many guys are coming in and all that. Like, I think you really only want to land one or two true freshmen every year because that transfer portal is going to be so valuable and you never know who's going to become available because of coaching changes or because of whatever situations take place across the country at different schools. So it's just a lot different. You used to try to sign every, great player that you could. And now you kind of hold that back a little bit. And Indiana's not the only school doing that. So that's why I think Indiana becomes more on the radar for some of these other schools, because Kentucky's not trying to sign five freshmen anymore, and neither is Duke. And there was a lot of years when, out of that top 25, out of the top five-star guys that are rated across the country, between, Duke and Kentucky, I mean, there's probably seven or eight of them right there every year. And that's just not the case anymore. And so I think those guys – there's more schools involved because those schools are only taking one, two, maybe three of those guys at a time. And I think that's going to stick around for the time being.
Yeah. And I've been saying for a while now, I do not think that anybody should be taking more than three freshmen unless they are a Cooper Flagg type. That doesn't count to me against the freshman list. He's not really a freshman if they're that. But other than that, you almost can't. Because, I fall back on the phrase that Kirk Cignetti uses, production over potential. And potential lies with the freshmen generally. Production usually lies with the guys that already have the experience. You know what they've done. You know what they can do. And in this day and age where transferring is just like going to get another job
right,
someplace else, it is readily available. And it's going, I equate it all the time of Walmart, man. Well, I need a point guard. Well, they're out on aisle five. Well, I need a center. Well, you got to go back over there in the hardware section. And that's basically what the portal's like.
It is.
You can go get what you want. So, I don't see a lot of, but they are going after a lot of guys, which I do wonder how many freshmen are in this class that they intend to or would want to bring in. Because for one thing, you never know how much you're going to need. You know the guys that are going to be gone if they're graduating or whatnot, but you could have a fine relationship going, but all of a sudden at the end of the season, somebody gets a better offer. And boom, no doubt. Didn't expect to lose him. And so now you've got to replace him. So it's a weird situation.
But that's also where Indiana – has an advantage, and not an advantage over everyone, but an advantage over almost everyone, because the NIL budget that Indiana has is, what do you want to say? You don't want to say it's the biggest in the country, but it's top five probably. I mean, it's up there. And so you are not eliminating yourself from any recruitment of any portal guy or incoming freshman because of money, where, there are a lot of schools that either they don't have the money to pay it or they just simply, it's their philosophy, they're not going to pay it. And so Indiana is in a little different boat with that. And I think when you look at, you now have guys in there in the staff, the coaching staff that are full blast, 100% recruiting 12 months a year, there's no off season for recruiting. And so when you've got those guys doing that accompanied with an unlimited NIL budget for the most part, you're going to be on a lot of radars, and you're going to be, a guy that's from Utah that you're talking about that has Arizona and UCLA and some of those schools on his list, also has Indiana on his list because their NIL budget. And that's probably because of a relationship with an assistant or somewhere along the lines. But more than anything, it's because of the NIL budget. Because if that wasn't there, they would not be on those radars. And that's what gives Indiana a little bit of a leg up on most other schools.
And he correctly says you have to have quite a few irons in both fires.
Yeah.
And that is dead on.
Yep.
It's something that I think Matt Painter is yet to completely make that switch to, because he's been able to keep his core of guys. I don't know how much longer that will be able to continue, especially after this season when they lose Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer and Trey Kaufman Wren, the triple crown that they have had for the last 40 seasons. After that, I don't know what it's going to be like. Now, he's going to recruit the same type of players until that changes, so maybe it doesn't change a whole lot.
I'm telling you, they're set up. They have a different – you know, I think they are the one program I can name off the top of my head that is going to withstand not totally buying into the transfer portal game, but dabbing into it a little bit, or, you know, at least getting the overseas player that they got, who's a very, very nice player. And they're going to be fine. You know, they've got that Jakari Harris as a backup point guard. Like, that dude would start on every other team in the Big Ten. And so, you know, he has stayed for his second year, so he is putting in the time. And Braden Smith will 100% be gone next season. So it will be his job at that point. And so they are kind of, you know, that big seven-footer that got hurt in their first game last year, like, that kid's a really good player. They've got backups. Like, they're going to be fine. Like, I don't see them changing their philosophy. I think their culture is what it is. And you know, they're one of the few programs, I think, across the country that is going to take what they want out of the portal but not rely on the portal, because I don't think they need it.
Cannot wait. This is shocking news to you. Last week I was playing golf with Kit Klingelhofer and Brent Hutton and another guy. 48 on the front, which is about standard. 38 on the back for me, my brother.
There he is.
Legit, straight up. I was not keeping score. I was not alone, so I was not cheating. It was unbelievable. But
that's fun. Where'd you play at? I know your country club's torn up. Where'd you play
that
at?
That was here. That was here.
At the point. Oh, awesome.
I've never been on the green on 18 and 2 in my life. I came within 3 feet of accomplishing that, but that probably will never happen again. Brother, I hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy this weather.
Appreciate it. Look forward to it, man.
Todd Leary, the shot father from myjumpshot.com, joined us, and appreciate him as always. We've got lots more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Back after this.
Know a team?
Welcome back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming to you on this Friday as you have made it to the end of the work week and heading into week two of college football season. Zach Osterman, the IU insider for the Indy Star, joins us now as always. Zach, how is your week going, man? This weather's been incredible.
Yeah, it's been great. Sorry, I'm in the car. I just dropped my kid off, so I figured it'd be better with no camera on my end. But
Probably smarter on your side. Absolutely. Hey, I say this all the time. I'm sure most people would prefer that I didn't have a camera on me. So it's all good. Indiana busy with visits this weekend on both sides of men's basketball and, of course, football. On the basketball side, Junior County of Wasatch Academy in Utah coming in, top 40 guard, and he's high on Indiana. And that's, you know, I've talked earlier with Todd Leary, and I said, you know, Indiana had done a good job previously of getting on these lists with guys, but it never really seemed like they were in contention before. But now you can tell they are actively being recruited and courted, and the interest is different. I think that the county, his, and what a name, Junior County. When I first saw that name, I had to ask if that was real. I'm like, really? Hey, it's always great having a different name. You can really do some work with that in the NIL world now. But 6'4 guard, he averaged over 13 points and nearly 5 rebounds and 3.5 assists per game on the Nike EYBL circuit. But impressions of Indiana were great, because I know how much of a great basketball school Indiana is in their history of winning, he told the Hoosier.com. And it never fails to amaze me how kids today, when they hear Indiana, even though Indiana has not been Indiana for 2.5 decades, it still resonates that the winning tradition is there, and it maybe not achieving the level that they have, but the desire, the fan base, the notoriety, it's all still there. And we'll get Zach back on. We lost him there for a second, but that means something, because in this day and age of social media and everything, is none of these kids were alive when Indiana was truly a dominant player in the college game. I guess you could go back to 2013. They were alive during that period, but that was like a little blip compared to the great successes that they achieved prior to that during Todd's era and before and somewhat after that. But it still resonates as a basketball place, even after last year's college football playoff appearance, a historic football season, still a basketball school. That I will guarantee you. So, so they'll have the visit in this weekend, as they'll be, all eyes will be on Junior County, but he's not the only visitor this weekend. Indiana also has plenty of football players coming in as well, visiting, and they'll be courting those guys. If I was coming for a visit, I would do my damnedest to make it for the Illinois game, Michigan State, UCLA, Wisconsin, all of that. Not a lot of great home games on Indiana's schedule this year. I have to be honest with you. The Illinois game, that's top. That's a big time. That's going to be a big time matchup. But after you get past that, there are only three more home games out of their final five games. And I don't know that any of those teams will have a winning record, to be honest with you. We'll have to wait and see. Michigan State, UCLA, Wisconsin are those three teams. But, what are you going to do next year? That'll be different. But we'll see about it. This weekend, Indiana taking on Kennesaw State, of course, and their former quarterback, Dexter Williams. Going to be a different style of offense that they saw last week. I know Brian Haynes said last week he hates that kind of offense. It's funny how a team – like Old Dominion, who is, you know, they're not going to compete again, you know, at the level of most Power Four programs, but yet they do something like how they run their offense that drove that drives defenses crazy. And although Indiana did a overall good job, minus save for two plays, and but yeah, Brian talked about how kept him up. But now you've got to switch into a different mode, completely different style, and it'll be interesting to see what success that Dexter Williams does or does not have this week as they come in to visit Indiana. Zach Osterman back with us, and Zach, I was just talking about lots of visits coming in. Indiana basketball's got a visit with Junior County, which, man, that's going to be a name. If he goes to Indiana, people are just going to love hearing Don Fisher or Jeremy Gray say Junior County. That's just that's a wrestling name, man.
Yeah. And forgive me, I'm not sure where you lost me. I looked down and the phone was off, but I'm home now. So hopefully my internet will hold this connection a little bit better. But no, what I was saying was just, I think Indiana has actually done, you know, for all that we talk justifiably about what Indiana has not been able to do in the last, you know, several years in terms of Big Ten titles, Final Fours, national titles, et cetera. I think what Indiana still does very well, with admittedly the help of NIL and rev share, is tell its story and sort of be able to tell recruits, hey, listen, this is still the expectation here. This is still the belief here. And, you know, this is our past and why we believe this can still be our future.
Yeah. And I was also talking to Todd about, I wonder how many freshmen that Darren DeVries wants to bring in. because in this day and age, that's changed. You're not looking at developing that many players long term now, and especially with the portal, you can go out and get the, as Kurt Cignetti says, production over potential. So not exactly sure how many players Indiana will need. Probably a pretty good idea, though, with this season. Don't expect anyone to really leave that's not, you know, scheduled to leave. But I don't know if they might be required to go into the younger class more than they want to, but it's going to be an interesting mix to see what he does.
Yeah, Indiana obviously was very portal heavy last year, and you're probably still in a position, if you're IU, where you feel like you are going to be pretty portal heavy through maybe at least one more cycle. I mean, at the moment, I think Indiana is expected to lose, what, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think 6 players will be out of eligibility after the coming season. That, you know, I mean, that's half your roster, and that's even before you consider the possibility that somebody decides to transfer, or, you know, an underclassman has a better season than you expect and wants to test the NBA draft or whatever. My guess would be that the ideal for any basketball coach would probably be 2 to 3 freshmen and 1 to 2, you know, really significant portal additions most years, maybe a little bit more on the portal side, depending on what you're looking for. You know, are you looking, for example, for proven shooting? Well, you're probably going to want to go into the portal for something like that, because high school shooters, you know, sometimes take a little while to adjust, or it's harder to put them on the floor because of other flaws or weaknesses in their game, like defense, rebounding, whatever. I think, like, long-term, if I'm guessing, you know, I think if you're Indiana, you're probably going to want to turn over no more than about 5 roster spots a year. I think that's a reasonable number in the portal era. I think that's also a reasonable number if, as any program would want to, you want to get to a place where you aren't graduate, or you aren't sending, or you, excuse me, you are sending a number of players, you know, to the NBA on a sort of a regular basis. And I would say that, you know, if the number is 5, then I would say 3 freshmen, 2 portal is probably a healthy number, in terms of that means that you're in a situation where those freshmen are becoming sophomores and juniors that are productive, that develop, that really kind of grow in your culture and your system, and then eventually become much more impactful players as they get older. And so you are going to have, you know, a situation where it's almost like you're plugging a couple holes with a transfer. Or it's worth even saying this, because, like, for example, you know, UConn had a couple players that fit this bill, where maybe it's 2 freshmen and 3 transfers, but one of those transfers is like a freshman or a sophomore that, you know, you like their numbers, you like their profile, and you say, you know, we're going to bring you in almost like you're a freshman in our system. And so at the end of the day, it'll be a transfer, but it'll be like Jani Broom at Auburn, where it's like, okay, people forget, yeah, he was a transfer, but I mean, everybody's only ever going to remember he spent, what, 3 years at Auburn? So it's just kind of like it you can kind of maybe straddle that line a little bit. It is going to take Indiana 2 to 3 cycles, I think, to really find that balance, just because ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, you're probably going to have to be a little bit more portal heavy, you know, sort of the next cycle. And then maybe a little bit, like, it's almost like it staggers down each year for maybe about 3 years if you do the job right. But if, you know, I don't know that Indiana's going to get to a place, and maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I don't know if Indiana's going to get to a place where it's like, boom, nothing but freshmen in year one. We don't need to worry about anything else, because, you know, you have pretty significant roster churn coming again next spring.
Yeah, and that's always, it's going to be, it's a balancing act now. It's, someone mentioned earlier, you've got to have a lot of irons in both fires, and that's exactly true. You've got to be managing. It's crazy all the things the coaches have to do now with re-recruiting your team sometimes, but the better, and it's not always going to be the case, but the better you recruit overall, probably the less recruiting you'll have to do if you can get the right fit, the right guys. I know money's going to, be a part of that now, but there are certain guys that are probably going to build their program, hopefully, in a more structured way. I know Matt Painter has been able to maintain that. He's probably going to have to move a little bit toward the other direction, but probably won't, not a lot, because he will not likely change what he's doing. So, yeah, great balancing act coming up, and we'll see how that works out for DeVries and crew. On the football side of things, Zach, Indiana coming off of a win, not the most glamorous win of the season, but it wins a win, and week one, you're always going to find things you got to work on. They did. They saw them, and they'll reboot it as they'll take on Kennesaw State and former quarterback Dexter Williams, another different style of offense, although obviously had a running quarterback last week. They're going to be seeing another one this week.
Yeah, I've made this comparison a lot in the last few days, and everybody knows I'm a little more soccer-brained than most people. For a variety of reasons, like advanced analytics were a little bit later to come to soccer, and because soccer is such a small outcome sport, because at the end of the day, it's a very small number of like actual scoring opportunities that decide most games. I think soccer really sort of struggled with how to apply those analytics for a long time. And I think the way that probably the most consistent way we have figured out to really take that stuff and overlay it onto the game is not as much predictive in the way that you might think of like baseball analytics is predictive, but more sort of almost when I say analytical, I know they're called analytics, but this idea of you have a very small number of outcomes that decide a soccer game. It ends 2-1. Then you have these analytics that tell you maybe what the stats and the numbers say the result should have been. And what I think we've done with soccer is we've almost taken those two and we've lined them up next to one another and said, when we see similarities, why do we see them? When we see differences, why do we see them? And we've learned more about how to use those analytics to apply to things like team building and recruitment and things like that. We're not talking in analytics in terms of what Indiana did on Saturday against Old Dominion. I kept wanting to say Florida International. You know, we're talking in terms of raw numbers, but it is kind of the same idea, which is that you look at the score and then you look at the underlying numbers and you ask where the deviations are and why the underlying numbers, why the numbers, as my beat colleague Mike Nieslick said, under the hood, don't reflect necessarily the score. And you sort of ask yourself, like, which is the truer gauge of Indiana's potential this season? The 500 yards of offense, the three turnovers, the fact that ODU didn't take a snap in Indiana territory, the 309 rushing yards, I think they had 230 plus yard runs. They only had 5 all of last season, so maybe a little bit more explosivity, if that's a word. Explosiveness certainly is a word in the run game, all these different things. Or is it the smaller outcomes, the drop touchdown pass, a couple of misses that Fernando Mendoza has, you know, either in the red zone or in that LeBron Bond throw? I don't think they're in the red zone at the time, but, you know, he's got Bond open there. That should be a touchdown. He would tell you it should be a touchdown. The missed red zone opportunities elsewhere, the individual sort of defensive busts, which is sort of more indicative of what we think Indiana should be, will be long term. And I feel like the underlying numbers, and I think Kurt Cignetti was sort of trying to say this. On Monday, he even had some final, you know, some alternative final scores in mind. I think what he was trying to say is, really, in our mind, we see this as if we'd done just a little bit differently, if we'd been just a little bit better, the underlying numbers say we should have won this game by a lot more. And I think if you're Indiana, what you want to see, and it sounds simplistic, but I mean, sometimes it's a simple conversation. What you want to see is that reflected Saturday against Kennesaw State, where you see a lot of those same numbers, you see a lot of those same performances, you see a lot of those, you know, sort of new skills and traits. Fernando Mendoza's ability to push the ball down the field, Roman Hemby's explosiveness, whatever, all, you know, continue developing depth, yada, yada, yada. But you're paying off drives in the red zone. You're not missing those throws. You're making the block at the 1 yard line. You are preventing the, you know, a pretty sort of basic quarterback run option from becoming a 75-yard touchdown run, because you're staying true to your keys and you're staying disciplined to what you're trying to do. So I think Kurt Cignetti, my suspicion is he looked at that game and he felt like the process was good. You just have to sort of refine and fine tune some small things to make sure that the result starts matching the process going forward. But Indiana's got to do it. And I think that there's an extent to which, and I'm not trying to demean Indiana State, but I think there is an extent to which you feel like you almost want to see it by the end of Saturday's game, because Indiana State is going to be kind of a, like, Indiana State's not really, I think, going to prove to you anything you don't already know about your team. If you thought about last year and you thought about those first two games as being designed to make sure Indiana was ready for UCLA, then I think these two games need to make sure Indiana is ready for Illinois. And I think that that's what makes Saturday's game important.
Absolutely. And seeing a familiar face, not familiar to any of the probably not any of the players, and especially the coaches on today's Indiana team. I'm sure there may be a few holdovers.
There are a few. So I looked this up because I talked to Dex on Wednesday night. Bryson Bonds and Khalil Benson are the only members of his recruiting class still around. Obviously, Benson left and came back. The only countable member of staff that would have been here when he was here was Bob Bostad, who he never would have played with, because if you remember, he was sitting out that whole 2023 season because of an injury. I counted it up, and if my numbers were right, it was somewhere between about 14 and 20 players that at least will have been on roster when he was here, between walk-ons and scholarship players. Some of them I think he would have known better than others. Like, there's a couple that he probably was only teammates with for a few months in terms of, like, the transferred in and then the season, and then he transferred out. But I mean, there are a few, actually. I think, you know, he said he was texting with, like, support staff. I wouldn't be surprised if the people he was talking about was with the training staff and the medical staff, because it's unfortunate, but he spent so much time with them, you know, during his Indiana career, suffered two knee injuries. And I know that was obviously very difficult, but you do forget he was here for 4 years. I mean, you know, in the portal era, we talk about transfers and we sort of assume that, like, they were here and then they were gone. I mean, he spent what we would have once considered essentially a college football lifetime in Indiana. Like, there was a time where 4 years was it. Like, that was what you did. Maybe five if you redshirted. You know, he spent a lot of time here, and he was around for him. And he was committed during the 2019 season when they went to the Gator Bowl. Like, that's kind of how far back the Dexter Williams IU, you know, era, however you want to put that, goes. So, I mean, it you know, and he also pointed out to me, I didn't kind of think about this. He said, the last time I played on that field was when I got injured against Purdue. Like, that was his last snap on the Memorial Stadium field. And he said he didn't even know Indiana was on the schedule when he committed to Kennesaw State. He liked the program. He liked the opportunity. But it'll be, I do suspect there will be a number of people behind the scenes who will be very happy to give him a hug on Saturday.
Oh, I'm absolutely. And plus, he won a huge game for Indiana unexpectedly. I mean, he was the unexpected star in that Michigan State game, in which, what did he throw, two passes in that game?
It was more than that, but he had some big runs. I mean, you know, that Purdue game, college football careers have these sometimes. That Purdue game, it really feels like one of the big swinging doors moments for me. Like, it really felt in that moment, the way he played against Michigan State, the way he was playing against Purdue. I'm not saying he's going to win the Heisman or anything, but it felt like there was sort of this path opening up to the idea that Indiana was going to become Dexter's team. And, you know, that Purdue team played for a Big Ten title. Now, obviously, you know, that was Michigan kind of steamrolled them. Michigan was just much better than anybody else in the conference over that 2 year period. But, you know, that Purdue team won the Big Ten West that year. That was the last year of divisions, if memory serves, or maybe I think it was the second to last year of divisions. But, you know, it felt in that moment between the Michigan State game and just a lot of the moxie and toughness that he showed in leading that comeback, which people forget, like, they were down, I think, 17 points in that game. I mean, that was like a That was a very unlikely win. It wasn't like they were down 8 with 6 minutes left and we call it a comeback win. Like they, it looked like, especially backdropped against the direction that that season was moving at the time, it looked like they were done. And then Dex comes in, he wins the Michigan State game, despite the fact that Indiana's, you know, in a 3-score hole. And I mean, for all the world, it looked like they were going to beat Purdue that day. They were running a bunch of option stuff that Purdue clearly was not prepared for. That's not something you can fix on the run. And it felt like, for a minute anyway, like Indiana's going to finish 5-7. They're going to win both their rivalry games. They're going to win 3 more games than they did a year ago. And they've got a quarterback who's got the dual threat, the athleticism, got to refine the arm talent, or got to refine the accuracy, but the arm talent is there, and you can do some, you know, creative stuff with him, moving him around, and he's really well liked in the locker room, and he's, you know, he's really gregarious. I remember Tom Allen saying he thought he'd be the mayor of Macon, Georgia someday, where Dexter Williams is from. You know, it really did feel like kind of a swinging doors moment, that if that just kind of catastrophic knee injury somehow is avoided. And I don't know the medicine enough to know whether or not that was just something that was almost inevitable in some ways. But, you know, if he doesn't suffer that injury, and he gets that whole off season to be, you know, it's Indiana is Dexter Williams' team and everything gets built around him and he gets to go through spring with that and develop with that. I'm just curious what it looks like in 2023. And it's unfortunate for him the way it happened. Obviously for Indiana, ultimately it winds up going in a good direction. You just hope that Dexter Williams is able to have some success too.
Yeah. You always want to see good people do well, but not at the expense of whomever you're rooting allies lie with. So, but getting on the other side, Indiana, their offense, pretty vanilla last week is one way to describe it, but that is somewhat understandable. But in the vanilla, it wasn't as clean as Coach Cignetti and everyone else would have liked to have seen. A drop pass here. I guess the biggest thing was with Indiana able to basically push Old Dominion around with over 300-yard rushing yards. Couldn't the red zone, in which Indiana was the best at in the country last year, kind of a, I don't want to say an eye opener, but it's an attention getter for the Hoosiers, as they went 4 of 7 getting stopped down there on the goal line that first time. Was like a little surprising.
Yeah. I mean, listen, on the one hand, you say Indiana, you know, like last season was the extreme end of the outcomes when it comes to red zone offense. You know, the idea that you're going to be number one in red zone scores and touchdowns and number two in touchdown percentage nationally every year. Like, that's just, you know, that was, you could be a really good red zone team annually, you know, really good at executing, really good at timing and rhythm and mixing up your play calls and whatever. And you're still not going to put those numbers up, you know, 19 years out of 20. Like, that's, to be number one or number two nationally is always going to be a little bit of an outlier. I think you have some concerns with the way you ran the ball in the red zone. You know, it does feel a little bit like a slightly different stable of running backs, and it's only one game, so let's not overreact. But, you know, we talk about Indiana had 2 30-plus yard runs last season, or last weekend. They only had 5 all of last season. I think Mike Nieselick, I think Mike had the stat that since 2014, they've only had 2 or 3 300-yard rushing games as a program. And listen, that's, you know, I know Indiana's had some pass-heavy offenses, but Indiana's had some pretty good backs at the same time, in that, you know, when you think about Jordan Howard, Devine Redding, Stevie Scott, obviously, you know, last season with Lawton and Ellison, it's not like Indiana has been starved for running back talent in that time period. But on the other hand, I do think that while maybe this group is a little bit more explosive, or at least looks a little bit more explosive, you know, you think about Justice Ellison and Tyson Lawton, like, those dudes were bulldogs. Those dudes would get down into short yardage situations, and they'd lower their head, they'd drive their feet, they would not stop until they got you forward. They were, you know, they were fall forward backs. They were, you know, chunk yardage backs. You know, Indiana had last season a lot of runs of 10 plus yards. I think they were second or third in the conference in runs of 10 plus yards. And just not very many runs. They were much more middle of the pack in 20 and 30 and 40 plus. So they weren't as explosive, but they were very productive and very efficient. And when you get, I mean, I want to say all of Tyson Lawton's rushing touchdowns last season came in the red zone. And then when you couple that to, I mean, Curtis Rourke was unbelievable in the reds. He was arguably the best red zone quarterback in the country. And again, you can't expect to have the best red zone quarterback in the country, period, end of sentence, every single year. But it is a little bit of sort of, you know, if as you say, you're probably keeping a lot of your more creative play calls, you know, kind of tucked away for a couple weeks. You might open a few more of those up this week just to make sure that you've worked on it a little bit in a live game setting. But in general, you're going to keep a lot of that stuff to yourself until you get to the big games. And then when you consider that maybe some of the skill sets are different, some of the emphases are different, you know, it's, I mean, Fernando Mendoza would sit here and tell you that he left at least two red zone touchdowns on the field just with bad throws. He was saying that post game Saturday. But I think if you're Indiana's offensive staff, you probably also come out of that game saying, okay, we knew we had guys that were different. We knew we had guys that weren't quite what we had a year ago. We maybe need, I mean, Signetti referenced the plan. That was the term he used, the plan in the red zone. We maybe need a little bit of a better plan for some of these guys, whether it's offensive linemen, running backs, quarterback, whatever. Maybe we've got to adjust what we're doing to make sure that we're putting them in the best position to succeed. So I think, I think Kurt Signetti would tell you if they had Old Dominion to do over again, you know, they punch that first red zone touchdown in. Maybe Omar Cooper doesn't drop that touchdown pass that, you know, he's wide open. And then, like, if literally you change only those two outcomes, that Indiana scores from first and goal on the one and Omar Cooper catches that 50 something yard touchdown pass, then I don't think we're having, then a lot of the conversations that we're having right now, I don't think, you know, like, we maybe are noting the red zone stuff, but we're talking about Mendoza 250 yards and two total touchdowns. We're talking about Indiana winning 41-14. We're talking about, oh, they covered again, you know, Roman Himby looked good or whatever. Even the red zone, it's like, hey, they scored on five of seven trips and five of six in non-garbage time. That, you know, that last possession kind of doesn't count in terms of red zone trips because they weren't trying to score. They were just trying to run the game out. So this is where I think you kind of talk in terms of underlying numbers versus outcomes. I think Kurt Signetti would say we are two very, very simple plays away from all of this feeling a lot less uncomfortable. And that's where I think this weekend Indiana might feel like it is an opportunity to maybe put some things right, maybe kind of prove a bit of a point. And maybe do, you know, what they did last year. I don't think Kennesaw State's anywhere near as bad as Western Illinois. I'm not trying to pick on Western Illinois, but let's just be very fair. You don't score 77 points very often in college football. But I think there's a world where we walk out of the stadium Saturday and we say that we feel like we saw the same sort of week one to week two growth from Indiana, and that whatever happens against Indiana State, provided Indiana can stay healthy, Indiana looks ready for that Illinois game in week four.
Absolutely. Zach Osterman, the IU insider for the Indy Star. Make sure you're giving Zach a follow. Keep it up with his great coverage and commentary, and be a subscriber. Keep local papers alive. I'm always been a proponent since I was a freshman in high school. Zach, appreciate you, brother. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me as always, Jim.
Thank you, my friend. More coming up here on this Friday edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Alec Lasley from thehoosier.com joins us next. Back with more right after this. Andy Moore. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Friday. Glad to have you along as we head into the weekend. Week two of college football. Alec Lasley from thehoosier.com with us now. I talked earlier about Indiana basketball having a big-time visitor this weekend, and and it's just having the one, all attention will be focused on him. And Indiana's in pretty good shape with I'm drawing a blank on his name. I just was talking about it a minute ago. But I need what's that stuff you take for memory?
Well, I think you need more than just a pill. I think you need probably a lot more there.
I need an injection, baby. I need an injection. But, Indiana has a visit on the – of course, Indiana football with plenty of visitors this weekend. But just a lone visitor on the basketball side, which probably makes it easier on the staff.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the live recruiting period, evaluation period started on Wednesday too. So coaching
Junior
staff
County,
was
how do I remember not I talked all I talked about was his name earlier, and I'm like going, how do you forget that? Man, he's gonna be able to do some NIL stuff with that.
No, absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, he's on campus this weekend. It was a busy week for the coaching staff being out on the recruiting trail. Made a couple stops here earlier in the week, Wednesday and Thursday. Junior County arrived last night, so the kind of the big bulk of his visit gets going today, and we'll wrap up then through Saturday. As of right now, it seems like Indiana needs to probably come from behind a little bit, just where things currently stand with him. UConn seems to be kind of the team that it's talked about probably the most with him. That's his last visit lined up. But outside of that, Arizona, Maryland, and then Purdue are the other schools in his final five. He's already visited Purdue. He visited Texas A&M with Buzz Williams, and then now Buzz Williams and that staff are at Maryland. So Maryland is kind of that that weird team that didn't really get involved until that old staff there at Texas A&M made the jump to Maryland. So they have that prior relationship. But Indiana's done a phenomenal job at least getting themselves in the thick of it with Junior County. They offered in late June, and immediately there was a lot of mutual interest there between the two from Junior County's perspective as well. So we'll see how things go. Obviously, Indiana's been heavily involved and active in trying to get a top point guard from the 2026 class. They had Tay Kinney on campus last weekend. Obviously, Junior County this week. They were pretty involved in Darren Rippey's recruitment before he trimmed that list, and that. You know, I don't want to say it comes at a, huge surprise because he had, 11, 12 visits set. He was not going to take all 11, 12 visits. And Indiana was one of those teams that that obviously got cut here over the last couple of days. So you look at Indiana's recruiting from a point guard perspective. I think, they're probably going to go with two guards from a point guard driven perspective, get one high school recruit, and then probably go land someone out of the portal because this offense is very heavily point guard oriented, heavily ball handling oriented. So you're going to need multiple guards, but you're also going to need multiple veteran guards. And so I think regardless of what happens from a high school point guard standpoint, they're going to go out in the portal and land someone there. Obviously next off season. So big visit this weekend, but I think you're looking at. The two major visits for Indiana coming up later this month with Anthony Thompson and then Ethan Taylor as the two that you really, really, really need to focus on from an Indiana recruiting perspective.
Yeah, and while we don't know for sure, my guess is that with six players that will be out of eligibility and probably maybe you can't ever count out someone leaving or not leaving in this day and age. But that's probably a smaller percentage this time around. I don't think that either of the two freshmen, Alexa Ristic and Trent Sisley, got going anywhere. Sisley, definitely. So a good chance of actually holding on to the remainder of your team, which is kind of unheard of in this day and age. It hadn't happened to IU since the transfer portal went this direction. But That's the quickest way to build continuity, even though you're still bringing in new pieces. Whatever continuity you can maintain, just kind of that's putting deposits in the bank.
No, absolutely. And even Andre Asimovich, the other international freshman that's coming in, right? You have the good core group of three freshmen that seem pretty much, you never want to say, fully invested into a program because you never know, but those three seem to be pretty solidified as at least coming back next year. Obviously, at this point, right, where we're September 5th, a lot can happen between now and then. But, you know, Indiana's done a really good job of, I think, you know, building in and bringing in some guys with still a couple of years of eligibility left, right? You have Josh Harris, who has 3 years left, 2 years after this year. You have, obviously, Josiah Miles, Jason Drake, as a couple other guys who still have an extra year after this season. So, you know, there's still some ability to have some continuity there with some of those guys if they do come back. But, you know, you can never rely solely on the expectation that they do if they have eligibility left. So that's why there's always consistent recruiting, you know, constant relationships being developed. And you always have to recruit over someone in this day and age, because you just never know, especially with NIL. Right? We saw it more and more this year with guys, you know, quote unquote, re-signing with a team just for a couple weeks later or a month or two later for another team to swoop in after they may have missed someone in the portal and raise that price for that guy. And then he goes and enters his name in the portal and then signs elsewhere. So it's a consistent battle of, you know, wanting to have continuity, but knowing that you can't fully trust anyone in any current environment in this day and age outside of maybe a, you know, handful of players. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what that roster looks like in the offseason. But they're obviously going pretty hard after some very, very talented five-star and top 25, top 30 players in the 2026 class that are, you know, more oftentimes are not going to make an impact, especially with a guy like Ethan Taylor and then Anthony Thompson, two guys who obviously are, you know, Indiana fighting neck and neck for in those recruitments.
Absolutely. Football team, of course, also has visitors coming in. That's a game in, game out thing weekly when you during the season for that to happen. So that will continue. But something of note, the NCAA, we're looking at major changes in the transfer portal. And in D1 football, there are two windows. There is the January window and there is a spring window. There's been so much consternation about that stupid January one before, because you would have teams that had not played their final game yet, but guys that either leave or the four game thing where they're watching the red shirt, and that may not change anything. But this, the changes that they're looking at is to move the January transfer window, which I'm going to assume is out, completely out of the season, which is, I don't know why that was even there to begin with, but to also eliminate the spring window, because you had teams like Nebraska, Matt Rhule, and others who didn't even have a spring game because they're like, hey, man, we have a spring game. Guys have a great spring, and all of a sudden they're on the market, and now my team has changed. So that anything they can do on the transfer window, I'm in favor of. I still wish there was some limitations to the transfers instead of unlimited. But at the same time, I have to say college athletics has never been better, never been more entertaining, never been more fun to watch. Basketball, football programs that have not been successful, i.e. Indiana, are able to not only compete but challenge programs that have been sitting at the top for all these years. So it's a catch-22 situation.
No, it absolutely is. And I, you know, I saw something about this, right? Because if you look at the dates, right, if you're going specifically in that January window, I think it would be, you know, January 20th is kind of that last day. But for a school that's on a quarter system, right, I saw this from our friends, the Northwestern on three site that we're talking about this. So Northwestern football, right, they begin their semester about 3 weeks earlier, or I guess their quarter, right, because they're on quarters, not semesters, 3 weeks earlier than that second semester would be for like an Indiana perspective, right, coming back from winter break. And they start classes on January 5th before the portal is open up. So there's a lot of, you know, different type of scenarios where you kind of have to play around with how does that impact, you know, some of these other schools that may not be on a semester by semester basis or on quarters, and how that lines up with the opening and the closing of the transfer portal window to get these kids eligible to actually be enrolled in the school. because that's, you know, obviously very difficult to do, make them eligible when they enroll mid-semester or mid-quarter for some of these scenarios, and then not be able to maybe potentially practice and miss some of that time, you know, from a football standpoint. So there's still a lot of things that need to get, you know, figured out. I think everyone from a scheduling perspective, from a recruiting perspective, from a calendar perspective, and then all the way into NIL, right? They just want some consistency and want a more firm, strict, overall kind of known fact of what's going to happen. And when you can make that spread out from, you know, all the conferences and all the teams, I think that's just, you know, something that'll not necessarily even the playing field, but just make things a lot more consistent for these coaches to go out and recruit and know kind of where they need to address certain needs and know specifically what their roster is going to be like at a certain time. And right now, you know, it just isn't that way. A lot of different aspects that they have to kind of navigate through. And that's why you see, you know, multiple different positions added to coaching staffs. And, you know, the general manager, who's now become such a big part of the sport from a football and basketball perspective, because there's just so much that goes on that a head coach can't deal with from the recruiting standpoint and roster attention standpoint, that there's a lot of things that still need to get cleaned up. And I think they're making the right steps to get there, but there's still a long way that needs to go before we actually kind of have some consistency from top down.
Yeah, it's going to come down to schools doing a great job of maintaining guys, which I know some guys are always going to be mercenaries. And when a great offer comes along, it's hard to say no to, because this, we're talking life-changing money, people. While it's not the Powerball, which if I win, probably won't see.
We won't see you tomorrow. Yeah.
Is the drawing's not until tomorrow? No, it's tonight.
I think it's Saturday night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably won't see me on Monday. If that is the case, I assure you that, but I won't be gone. I would not leave. The fact that they're trying to do that, and it's hard to do stuff with football because the NCAA, they control rules and whatnot, but they don't control the tournament. So it seems like there's probably, there's so many ins and outs and a lot of facets, a lot of ins and outs for you.
No, absolutely. And a lot of things that they still fans are going to try to figure out, right? So this is not a, you know, one rule fits all type situation. There's, you know, one rule is going to have an impact on something else. It's going to have an impact on something else, right? And I think we're still, you know, probably, you know, a couple years away from really having a true understanding of what this entire, you know, kind of NCAA schedule is going to look like. But more importantly, what the NCAA is going to look like. And I think that's still kind of the big question from a lot of these programs and a lot of these conferences of, you know, what's going to happen over the next year or two, right? You know, rev share has become such a big, you know, aspect of different teams and different conferences and media rights and everything. And that was not, you know, the case, or at least as big of a scenario 2, 3, 4 years ago, right? So in the next 2 or 3 years, there's probably going to be something else that drastically changes everything. And I think the NCAA is just trying to kind of hold on for dear life at this point and solidify themselves as, you know, still the governing body, when in fact we know that it all comes down to the schools and they kind of run this thing, albeit, you know, under that kind of NCAA umbrella.
Yeah, and I would not be surprised to see this in college in the future. Right now, what the LA Clippers are dealing with Kawhi Leonard, the NBA has a salary cap. However, I don't know how all that stuff works. I know that's capped and this, that, and the other thing, and there's ways to move things around, but it's not this way. Apparently, if you haven't been following that, he had a $28 million no-show endorsement deal through a company funded by the Clippers owner, Steve Ballmer, which was a way of circumventing the salary cap, which I could see that happening in NIL. We've already got schools that are, they aren't, but there are LLCs that are popping up to provide NIL opportunities to get around certain rules and of this. So it's kind of hitting the pros. This is the pros following the college lead here, man.
Yeah, I mean it's a little bit different in the standpoint that, right, you're supposed to have a level playing field in professional, you know, right, with the specific salary cap of not being able to go over. Right, right now you can go spend however much you want on any sort of college player, and that's really not going to impact, you know, what your overall team is going to cost from that standpoint. It's more of a, you know, kind of invisible salary cap. But the fact, I think, that the biggest thing is that this pseudo company, right, that Kawhi Leonard accepted, I think it was like 28, 29 million from as an endorsement deal, is now bankrupt. And, you know, he never made any sort of appearances for this, or he never did anything to hold up his end of said endorsement. That's what kind of raised red flags here. It's an interesting case, obviously, that I think is going to be, you know, highly scrutinized for the Clippers, just due to the fact that, that this is now the second or third time that the Clippers have had some sort of, you know, drastic news scenario from outside of the court, right, and off the court, from their owners and from their front office. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I, you know, wouldn't be surprised if there's more players that news that comes out with additional players who've had some sort of, you know, kind of under the table deal like this. But certainly a guy like Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers, you know, two relatively big, you know, brands in a franchise there, is obviously notable, especially when it comes out of LA. So will be interesting to follow for sure, but definitely not the news that I think anyone was expecting to hear yesterday or the day before when it popped out.
Hey, make sure you go to thehoosier.com to follow all of the complete and in-depth coverage provided by thehoosier.com. You can go check it out for just $1, 50% off the first year, and a subscription to The Athletic along with that, along with some great deals from Academy Sports and Outdoor. All kinds of great reasons to go there. Alec Lasley, appreciate you, my friend.
I appreciate it, Jim. Have a good one.
You as well, brother. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Friday to get you sent off on the weekend right after these messages. Andy, welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Friday. Jim Coyle with you as always. Hey, make sure you go to ESPN Fantasy tab for our get your pick'ems in for the weekend for the games. Last night I was out at the coaches show, as I mentioned, so talked to Brian Haynes for a while, and I got to meet the sweetest little girl. Aslan was there with Doug, and she is just cute as a button. I was hoping to be able to pull I emailed the picture to myself, but I couldn't get it pulled up. But she's just a little sweetie, man, just cute as a button, big Indiana fan. And so I hope she had a great time. She seemed like she was having fun. I hope you guys have had a great time as well. Go off, enjoy the weekend, head out to a high school game tonight, and come out to the Indiana game tomorrow, noon kickoff. We're back, and we'll have the post-game show. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.